Attention Austin musicians and music industry professionals. The Austin Music Foundation is dedicated to strengthening and connecting the local music community with innovative programs that empower musicians, music industry professionals, and music businesses within Austin's creative economy. With expert panels, consultations, mentoring, and mixers, AMF's programs provide the necessary tools and opportunities to help the Austin music industry succeed. Find them at austinmusicfoundation.org and get involved. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope that you've all had a very, very good week. I have had a great week, my friends. My EP is finished. Finally, there was a curious noise in one of the tracks. We finally found it this morning, and now it's done. It's mastered. The whole thing's done. I don't know when it's going to come out, but I'm very excited. I'm very, very excited. Very proud of it. Wednesday night, I got to co-MC the Wind Down, the very first one of the season. That's a free concert series that happens the last Wednesday of every month at 310 ACL Live. And I got to go on behalf of the Austin Music Foundation as they're one of the sponsors and benefactors of the event. And it was great. It was a great event. I went up, Kalu and the Electric Joint played. They were fantastic. I got a lighter and some rolling papers from them as I left. Got some nice raps. I learned that word when I was in Miami, raps. Anyway, look, that event was great. The Wind Down is great. And I just wanted to tell you guys that the Austin Music Foundation does do some great things for this community. If you're a musician or if in the music industry and you need information, go to the austinmusicfoundation.org, austinmusicfoundation.org, and get involved. Set up a consultation. There's a guy named Einar. He's been my best friend for almost 30 years. We toured the United States together several times for like 10 years, musical compadres. Now we do some stuff there together, but he handles the consultations. You can go in there and talk to him about what you're trying to do with your career in music, and he can help you, give you some guidance. There's a lot of panels they offer. Everything's free. Everything that they offer is free. You go in there, you talk to someone, you go to a panel, you learn some stuff, you get to go to these mixers like the Wind Down. So listen, Austin Music Foundation is a good thing for our music community. Get involved if you can. Go to austinmusicfoundation.org. Okay? I'm done with that. And the reason why I'm talking about Austin Music Foundation is Austin Music Foundation Artist of the Month is Mobley. Now, Mobley is an amazing artist. Amazing. I have to tell you, if you have not heard him yet, I'd never met him. I'd heard his music. I happened to see him one time and I was blown away. I went to the Project ATX6 thing and got to see some video of him or some film of him. I'm sorry, the Project ATX6 Gala. That's what I went to back in, I think, like December or January or something. And I got to see some film of him playing like all over the world in Germany and in Japan. We talk all about it. But anyway, Mobley is an amazing artist. He's like a self-contained, brilliant artist. He writes, performs, records, and produces his own records. He mixes them and masters them as well. He does his own artwork. He makes his own videos. He produces his own shows. And when he needs a new kind of instrument, he builds one. This guy's fascinating. He's amazingly talented, completely self-contained, and our conversation is extremely deep. He's a very thoughtful man. And I do have to say, I was a little intimidated when he came over. When I opened the door, and I was like, hey, I'm Johnny. And he was like, hi. And then he came in. And I told him where to sit down. There wasn't a lot of small talk. Asked him if he wanted something to drink. He said no. And we just started recording. So like what you're hearing is basically me meeting Mobley. And I had an amazing time getting to know him. And I hope that he had an amazing time talking to me. Because it feels like he really opened up a lot pretty quick. And that was a surprise. I didn't know what was going to happen. Because when I sat down, I was like, oh no, maybe this guy's just real quiet. And he doesn't have a lot to say. but he really does. He's so thoughtful. And his album, Fresh Lies, Volume 1, comes out today, Friday, April 27th. If you're listening to this the day that it comes out, he's also performing at Waterloo Records today, Friday, April 27th, at 5 p.m. That's a free show. Go there. They have free beer and stuff. You can take your kids if you go. Just go there. Check him out. See him. He's an amazing performer, an amazing artist. I did not get to go to his listening party where he also performed on Wednesday. I saw that was going on, but because I was doing that that wind-down thing. Too many things going on sometimes. Anyway, Mobley is an amazing artist. We have an amazing conversation. He is heading out on tour next week, May 3rd. He will be on tour of the United States starting off opening for Bob Schneider from May 3rd to July 9th. He'll be playing all over the United States, and he'll be doing a show in Mexico. And I really, honestly, I can't tell you what an amazing conversation I had with him, how fun it was getting to know him. And really, I think it comes through in the conversation. So without further ado, I'm not going to hold back. Here's my new friend, the amazingly talented Mobley. Let's get down.
Are you certain? Are you whole? Are you warm? Are you safe? Are you hedging your bets with the time that you borrowed a day? Tomorrow, it's a fiction, a vapor, a shade.
Let's jump right into it, man. Your album's incredible.
Thank you.
It really is, man. I've listened to it a bunch of times, and I'm just like, I'm blown away. I read in the bio part that you recorded it a couple of times, and you threw it away a couple times.
Yeah.
What? I've been in that situation. What was your situation?
So I, as you say, I recorded a couple versions, I guess you could call.
Is it the same songs?
No, completely different songs. And I'm still happy with the vast majority of that work. But I just had a sense that it wasn't the right time for it.
Yeah.
And I wanted the material to match the time, both stylistically and thematically and all that. And so When I got to what I have now, I felt like I had it.
Before we get into the content of the album,
sure.
I feel like just from reading about you and hearing your stuff that like someday you're going to have like a vault. You know what I mean? Like box sets will come out in the future.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You
Hopefully.
Think that you'll release any of those tunes from that, like as singles or something as time goes on? Or
I'm sure I'll release some of them, yeah.
So the focus of this album, Fresh Lies, Volume 1, then is that the story one of as far back as your generations of your family goes?
So the idea is I'm all the songs in the Fresh Lies song cycle, which is what the larger work is. This is Volume 1 in what I'm calling a song cycle. But all the songs in the song cycle will be love songs, and they'll use the metaphor of a romantic relationship to explore my relationship with the country. And it's something I want to be a career-spanning thing. I initially had conceived of it as an album, but for me, for my idea of what a Mobley album is, I like the idea of it being a very discreet, concise, definite statement on whatever topic it's trying to address. And the topic of my relationship with the country, particularly through the lens of race and gender and all that, is not something that I can just make a 35-minute statement
on.
No,
you can't.
And so the thing you're alluding to kind of set some sort of parameters, I said that I would make a volume of Fresh Lies for every generation of my family since my earliest ancestors were brought here. And I don't know what that number is. Okay. So there's kind of a parallel like genealogy research thing going on where I'm trying to trace that back.
So you don't know exactly when they came here?
No.
You know where they came from?
No.
Okay.
No. The records that I have stop in the late 1800s. There are no records before that I have access to.
Where was your family then?
Georgia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where were you born?
I was born in North Carolina.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were you raised? How did you get to Austin?
So my dad was a Marine.
Okay.
So I lived all over the world. And then I moved to Austin specifically to pursue music.
Okay.
Yeah.
When did you do that?
I moved here in the summer of 2008.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so you've been here for 10 years.
Yeah.
You've really made some great strides career-wise.
Yeah. I'm trying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you seem like you've got a team going on behind you for this record. And it comes out this Friday. This will come out the same day that your record
great.
Comes out.
Yeah. It comes out today then.
Yeah, today. Friday, April 27th.
Yeah.
And you're going to do an in-store at Waterloo?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
So where did you go to college? Because it said that you started learning instruments like going into, did you go into like the piano labs and stuff after they were closed?
Yeah. So I took violin lessons when I was really young, when I was like 4 or 5. And then I played a little bit of trumpet in middle school. But my real music education was sneaking into the music department in college after hours. I knew I didn't want to major in music. I wasn't really interested in studying the theory of it. I knew myself well enough to know that that wouldn't be healthy for my relationship with music. I knew that I would enjoy it more and probably get more out of it if I explored it myself. So what I would do is on the way to dinner every evening, I would put a rock in the back door while it was still unlocked, and then they would lock the whole thing down. And then at night I would sneak in and then be in there from like, I don't know, 10 or 11 till like 5 a.m.
Till they open back up.
Basically, yeah.
That's cool, yeah. Man. It's dedication. There's something about that in your music. You can hear the dedication, and it's all you.
Yeah.
Like, it's all you making this music, and you play by yourself. I've seen you play once.
Okay, cool.
And it was like I happened to see you, and I literally had like a, what the fuck? Who is this guy? You know what I mean?
Thanks, man.
Like, where did this guy come from? Where were you going to college?
The University of North Carolina.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what were you studying?
I was studying linguistics and film.
Okay. Did you get your degree?
Yeah.
You seem like there's something like valedictorian about you.
I was the valedictorian.
You were?
Yeah.
It doesn't even say that in your bio. There's just something you carry yourself.
That's funny.
Like a guy that's the smartest guy in the room. Not in a bad way in any way. There's cool. Just a supreme confidence, intelligence-wise with you, well, which I always enjoy in a person.
Thank you. I appreciate
almost
it.
Almost like an author. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So so why Austin instead of other places? Because you lived all over the world. What yeah. What was this?
You know, at the time, Austin was pretty cheap place yeah. to live still. I mean, it still kind of is relatively, but it was a lot cheaper then. And I'm not a real... I like visiting big cities, but I don't really like the idea of living in one that much.
Right.
And so it was either... Really, it was either Nashville, which just... I wasn't interested in Nashville because my career goals just didn't align with what that city has to offer. And New York, LA, Austin. And I thought about New York, thought about LA, visited both places. And I came out here and interned for a real tiny indie record label that's now defunct. It was called I Eat Records. I interned for them summer 07 and just checked out the city. And I had a real small town feel. And relatively easy to get around.
Yeah.
I could wrap my head around it, you know?
Yeah.
And so, that's why I came to Austin.
Yeah. So when you said that your goals didn't align with Nashville, was that you don't want to be like a songwriter for other people or you don't, or like their thing is so, there's something weird about Nashville.
Yeah.
There's a great underground.
Sure.
Like a rock underground.
And I think that's bigger now than it was then.
Right. But there is something odd in the music business about it that's different than LA and New York.
It is. It is. It's kind of like, it's kind of a different track. And I know several really, really good writers, talented musicians who are killing it out there. But yeah, I think it's a different lane. Like,
what is your lane?
Gosh, that's part of the problem. that's part.
Well, you like seem like a self-contained musical unit, like a Bowie or a Prince or something. Like you're on your own,
right?
Isn't that The Weeknd? Doesn't he do the same thing? I just found out this is how old and white I am. I just found out that was his name like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. I don't know too much about the internal workings of his thing.
He seems like a self-contained kind of guy.
Yeah, he definitely puts across that image, which is cool. This whole mysterious thing. I think it's cool to be able to, in the kind of like social media age, to be able to maintain some mystery. I think it's a cool thing.
There's a fine line, though, between it, isn't there? There's like a fine line between being mysterious and fading away into obscurity or... promoting yourself or driving people nuts with your face.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's really hard. I mean, I, like, on a personal level, I hate all that stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, no, you know, it's made a lot of great things happen in the world, and it has its place, but in terms of, like, wanting to plaster my name and face all over the place and be self-promoting, hey, look at me, it's really not my
thing. Your social media, it doesn't feel like that.
Well, that's good to
and
hear.
And there's a reluctance, even in the photos like from yesterday where you were picking up your records at the place, there was like, okay, I'm doing this, look on your face. Which I totally respect. Like, I understand that it's a drag, but it's something that's there and we can use it to our advantage. So what are we gonna do? I want to ask you about your relationship with this country. Like, what is it? It's difficult.
It is difficult.
Yeah.
It is difficult.
There's a lot of different things because your father served in the military. Mm-hmm. So you are, in some ways, you were raised in the inside.
Yeah, very much.
Where
very
things much so. Work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely grew up... Even on the inside of really kind of, you know, flag waving patriotic organization, my family always encouraged critical thinking and questioning and all that. So
that's American.
It of course, yeah.
That's like profoundly American. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
but yeah, I mean, you know, you. Even then, you know, you are told certain stories about the way that things are supposed to work, and it's always presented to you as though that's the way they actually work. You know, you work hard, you'll get ahead, you know, people get what they deserve, blah, 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 all those things. And I don't think anybody's ever trying to be deceptive or cruel necessarily when they say those things. But as you get older, you start to realize, like, no, that's not actually how things work. Lots of people who don't work hard and are jerks make it to the top. And lots of people, like, work their asses off and end up homeless. Like, that's just the way the world is.
Yeah.
And then to have that, like, further complicated by racism, for example. Like I said, I grew up all over the place. I don't have any memories of the United States before I was like 10.
Okay.
So there were lots of things, such as like the particularly American brand of racism, that I just didn't have any awareness of until I was pretty old. And we moved to Virginia, and I don't know if you've ever been to Virginia, we've got a really just
that's the South, man.
Yeah, yeah. We got a great flavor of racism in Virginia. But I guess to step back, I think a lot of people who a lot of white people, let's say, don't realize is, like, when you're born black in the United States or as an American, you don't realize you're black. Like, you're just a person.
Right, yeah.
And then the world shows you you're black. You know what I mean? And what that means.
Yeah.
And so that didn't happen for me as early as it does for a lot of people, I think, just because I wasn't around a bunch of Americans. Like, and it means something different in England, for example, or Spain. Sure. It means something, but it means something different. And so I had all these ideas, and then to kind of, like, I was called the N-word in fifth grade or whatever.
Did you even know what it was?
I don't know whether I'd even heard the word before.
Yeah, yeah.
I may never have heard the word before, before then. But obviously, like, you do, like, I did my homework quick, you know, like, you get caught up.
Yeah.
And so anyway, that was the very slow beginning of a very long process of kind of, coming to understand the history, of all that and what it meant for my relationship with the country. But anyway, I say all that to say, I think when a lot of people hear black people in particular talk about racism and how it inflects their relationship with the country, they kind of hear, oh, these people are complaining. They want to be the victim. They blah, 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 all these things. Yeah. But the thing that I don't think is appreciated enough is, like, we, like, eat apple pie and watch baseball and all that shit, just like everybody else. Right.
Defend our country.
Right. Yeah. And, like, I was raised to love America and wave the flag and all that. And it was profoundly disappointing. It was heartbreaking to come to understand the nature of the relationship.
It's interesting because it wasn't like you grew up here. So it wasn't like a gradual getting to know things as they happen. It was like, it like hit you in the face one day when someone called you a name.
Yeah. Yeah, and then obviously the process of
but
that's why I chose to use a romantic relationship as a metaphor, because it was really like over the course of young adulthood, especially, it was like, oh, this thing that I was in love with, like, there's this sense of rejection, and then the complicated dynamic that injects into a relationship where it's like, I deeply care about this country still. I love the people of this country.
Yeah.
But I can't just love the country in an uncomplicated way. You know, like, it has to be critical.
Yeah.
Or else it won't get better.
Yeah. You know? To me, that's what being an American is.
Like, ideally,
it has to be.
Yeah.
Because it's the only place, like, built on a philosophy that's constantly evolving. And it's almost like a breathing organism. It's not like a monarchy where things are set in place and this is the way things are going to be. It's like a living, breathing thing that changes.
Right.
And there are amendments to different laws and things. And, like, it's really unique. So
but
you
it
have
only
to
works
constantly
if you work it. You
yes.
Know?
It only works if you work it.
Yeah.
Exactly. So during that time when you were a kid, you said you took violin lessons. How old were you?
I think I was like 4 when I took the violin lessons.
Okay.
Yeah.
When did you, like, connect with music where you kind of were like, oh, this is...
So I think, looking back, I think I always wanted to do it.
Yeah.
But I was the oldest of 4. I don't really identify with the term overachiever, but I think that's what people would have called me in school.
Do you think that there was some kind of... I always wonder this about military kids. Is the discipline instilled in you as a kid? Like, you make your bed every day. There's certain things you sit down, you study, and you learn how to get from point A to point B.
Yeah.
In a direct fashion.
Yeah. I mean, not every military kid I knew was
that. No. There's
but
rebels.
That was definitely part of my upbringing, mm-hmm. for sure. Yeah, like hospital corners on the bed and everything. Yeah. I was definitely part of my upbringing.
So sorry. Go ahead.
But so to that point, you know, you never, hardly anybody knows any professional musicians, really. You know what I mean? So it's not like I could, especially on a military base, you know, it's not like I could look around and be like, oh, this guy's writing songs and making a living.
Right.
So I can do that, you know? So it just never even occurred to me that it was a viable way to make a living. So when I went to college, I thought I was going to be, a lawyer. I thought I was gonna pursue that, and I thought I would go into politics. And this guy who was in my first class, my first day of college, kind of followed me back to my dorm from our first class. And when we got there, he saw my guitar and he told me it was a drummer. And we found some drumsticks and he started drumming on something and I started strumming the guitar. And then I have not stopped doing that.
Yeah, was that the first time you ever played like with someone else?
Making original music, yeah.
That's so cool though, isn't it? That feeling.
Yeah.
Did you have ways to record it? Because you're really, I mean, you record all that stuff. Are you fucking great engineer? You mix it too?
Thank you, yeah, yeah.
Don't tell me you also are like a mastering guy too.
I do master. You do? Yeah. I'm just extraordinarily cheap is what I am. But yeah, so I started out recording in my car because those were the best speakers I had. And so I had a laptop and I would plug the laptop in. I had one of those tape adapters. Yeah, yeah.
And you go with the headphone jack out.
Yeah, exactly. And then I would hang a mic from the rearview mirror and record in my car. Yeah.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, and you just kind of like had, did you, when those first songs, did they have like, because you have great structure and you tell it, you know what I mean? You're a great songwriter.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that.
Did you kind of come into it? Because some people come in with the structure ingrained in them from listening to music and feeling it so much that once you start writing it, you start writing songs that are like laid out the way that they're supposed to be, whatever, right?
I think I always had the structure. Like my very first song was a super catchy pop song. I wouldn't sing it anymore, but like if I had been born like 10 years earlier or something like that, I think I still believe in that song as a song.
Yeah.
But I think there was a kind of wilderness period too where like at first, there's this excitement of, oh, I've never done this before. Like, I'm making stuff out of thin air. This is so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's that point. And for me, it came like probably like a year and a half in where I was just obsessed. I would do this every single day for hours a day to the exclusion of a social life.
Sure, sure.
I don't think I even had a meal with anybody for like a year and a half. But then there comes that point where it becomes work. Mm-hmm. You know, where it's like, okay, I've burned off that excitement, but I still love it. But the excitement alone doesn't do it anymore,
right?
And that's when it was like, oh, I have to figure out like what my actual voice is because I have to like it. I have to like what I make. It's not enough to just be making something,
right? Right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's when I started finding more of a voice as a songwriter.
That's amazing. And that was during college?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then after that is when you moved here?
Right.
Okay. Yeah. And so did you ever record with other people? Did you ever do you do stuff with the band at all?
So I made one record in a studio with a band proper. And the band was pretty good. I was not happy with the producer.
Okay.
And that was really what kind of impelled me to, I started buying software, started buying gear and being like, I need to figure out how to do this so that I don't have to mediate these ideas through another person who's going to change them because they can't help but change
right,
them.
Right. Right.
And that's when I really started focusing on really learning engineering and becoming a better producer and all that. And then I self-recorded a bunch of stuff with all of this has basically been the same musical project, but there were some other guys who would be on the records. I was always writing the songs, but they would be on the records and at the shows. And then I tried one more time to record with a producer. A guy who was managing me at the time knew this really good producer. He's a great producer. He's like produced some stuff that I love. But I just couldn't get the ideas out the way that I wanted to. And I spent a ton of money doing that, a ton of time, and it kind of validated the idea that, okay, these were like, this is a $30,000 mic I was singing into, and this was a great console, and this guy has been nominated for a Grammy. It's not.
And it's not happening.
And it's not happening. Yeah. So it doesn't have anything to do with it. Like, I felt better about the stuff that I did, like sitting naked in my bedroom,
yeah,
like with a mic, than I did about that stuff. So it was like, all right, then just go all in and you're going to make this stuff. And that's, I think that was the kick in the pants I really needed to be like, it's like, don't believe in all the trappings of all this other stuff. It's, you know, is the signal getting to the medium? And
right.
Is the thing that's being recorded good? You know?
Yeah. Well, to me, like, I do work with the Austin Music Foundation in that sometimes I moderate panels and stuff for them. And there was a conversation we had, you know, Dwight Baker.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, he was on a panel. He's a producer. And there's one thing, like, people are freaking out so much about social media and their numbers and this and that, that people don't even think about if they're making great music that means is going to mean something to people. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like, that's the one part that's totally forgotten in this modern age of like, oh, I can do everything myself. Well, you're doing everything yourself. You're still focusing on making great music. And to me, that Dwight Baker comment that he made that night, which was, if you're great, they're going to find you.
Sure. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Eventually. You don't have to
hopefully
go,
you'll hopefully be alive so. When they find you.
But if, but if you're great, you'll like the cream rises to the top.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the good stuff is there.
Yeah. And I think relatedly to what you're saying, I've always, ever since I, like I said, I got past that point of the excitement, the excitement alone driving things. There comes a point where you've played a couple shows and, at least for me, I had the realization, it's like, oh, I'm standing up in front of a room full of people demanding that they pay attention to me. Like, if I deconstruct this away from music, it's kind of a weird thing to do, be to stand up and be like, hey, everybody, just shut up and listen to what I have to say.
Yeah.
And when you're, I now especially have really strongly feel that it's an actual moral obligation. Like, you are...
Yeah.
Privileging your time and your voice above other people's time and voices, you have an obligation to actually say something, to actually communicate with them, to communicate to them and with them something meaningful. And if at the bottom of it all, the meaning is, look at me, I want attention, then you should sit down and,
yeah,
and wait until something better comes to you, you know?
Yeah. That's what the sort of, Kardashian culture, famous for being famous,
right?
Which sometimes people are happy with that, you know.
It's weird.
Yeah,
it's weird.
It's almost, how old are you? Do you mind me asking?
I never tell how old.
Okay,
I
don't. I don't blame you. I tell how old I am, but that was stupid of me to do a long time ago when the internet first started, because I was just like, I was only like 29, and so I was like, oh yeah, no problem, man. Sure, I'm 29. It's cool. Now it's all out there. It's funny because with social media and all this stuff, I wonder if without a record label, you would have been able to get 1.3 million plays
right
on one song on Spotify.
Right.
How did you get on a playlist or something? Is that what happened?
I think so. Honestly, I don't know what happened. It like probably like half those plays are in Mexico.
Yeah. I saw you were going there on this big tour.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were on, that song, Swoon, got picked up on, which is on the new record, got picked up on this Spotify official playlist in Mexico, and I put it out, and, you know, it got my, what I expected. It got, you know, a couple thousand, or maybe like 10,000 plays or something like that, and I was like, cool, this is, like, solid. The 10,000 people is a lot, just sidebar.
Yeah.
I hate the way that having all these numbers facing the public has kind
of... It's real weird.
It's warped our sense of...
Yeah.
10,000 plays is so many plays.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
It's nothing in terms of, like, if you want to be a success.
Foo Fighters or something,
right,
yeah.
But, like, who gets... who has 10,000 people listen to their song?
Yeah,
that's
not many.
Wild.
Yeah.
Nobody. Like, in terms of human, human history...
Yeah.
Who has had that much attention paid to anything that they ever said or did?
Yeah.
Virtually no one.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, it, you know, it has 10,000, then we look at it one day just randomly, and it's like, the song has 150,000 plays, and then it had 200,000, and then 300,000, 400,000, and yeah, it's a million eventually, which is still mind-blowing to me. But yeah, I don't know how it happened. I'm trying to replicate it again, but I have no idea how it happened.
You know? That's always the funniest thing about success is that a lot of people, like when you do pass some milestones, you're like, how did you do that? You're like, I don't know. I did it the same way I did it all the time before when no one bought it, but they just happened to click this time.
Right, right.
It's interesting. Yeah. Like it's that thing about when they say like luck, or it's when luck meets preparation. Like, yeah. Six. What is it?
Yeah, yeah.
What's
yeah.
the word that?
I don't know. Success, it's something. I guess? Yeah,
yeah. All right. So you are going on like a huge tour of the U.S. and you played like what 200 shows the last couple years each year.
Yeah, I don't know if I hit 200 last year, but it was definitely still between 150 and 200, and then yeah, 200 the year before. So
now all over the country, like you open for a lot of bands. You are, like on this tour that's coming up, you're going to be going all over the States. I saw you're doing some shows with Bob.
Yeah, the first run, the May run, is opening for Bob.
Okay,
Bob Schneider, and then we're going to Hangout Fest in Gulf Shores.
Yeah, that's that beach one.
Yeah,
I've always wanted to go to that.
Yeah, me too. So we just got that call like last week.
Congratulations,
thank
man.
Thank you. Thank yeah. you. So we're doing that, and then we have a couple quote unquote days off in which I have to shoot a couple music videos.
Are you going to direct these yourself?
I am, yeah, yeah.
That's great. You know who was like that? Devo. Devo took like a smaller advance and they were like, hey, if you just leave us alone, we'll just give you the whole thing when it's done.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. It's I really prefer to do that. I like collaborating with people, but I like the integrity of vision that comes from,
sure.
you know, this video is as close to what was in my head as I could get for the money. And this, you know, this song is as close to what was in my head as I could get. I don't know. There's an intimacy to that I think is cool.
Yeah. I like the lyric video, the sing-along video that you have.
Thank you.
That's a good idea.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've never even seen someone do that.
Yeah.
Have you?
No.
It's weird that no one's done it.
It is.
It's kind of like it's just a great idea sitting there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Genius. Yeah, thanks, so who's the second leg of the tour with?
So part of it's going to be with this band, Animal. And then the rest of it's just kind of, you know, random locals.
Right.
All over the place.
And today, Friday, April 27th, you'll be playing at Waterloo.
Yep.
5 p.m.
That's right.
Yeah. 5 p.m. Come in. Yeah. Get some beer, bring your kids,
yeah.
buy some records. It came out on vinyl, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. And my first pressed vinyl.
That's
yeah.
exciting.
Yeah.
Have you played it on your record player a lot?
I've only had time to play it once. I played the test pressings, right. of course, but I played it once the other night while we were mailing out the pre-ordered vinyl, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing thing. Do you buy vinyl?
Yeah.
Normally?
Yeah.
I have a question for you. Who do you listen to? Before I have this other question, but who do you listen to? Like, did you go buy anything this weekend during record store day?
I was out. I was on the road.
Yeah, I was too.
And it stormed. So we couldn't go out. It was like almost, we were in Oklahoma and it was a really bad storm. But new stuff, or are you asking about new stuff?
Yeah, new stuff.
The last album, I think, that I was really into as an album, where I listened to the whole thing over and over again, was Solange's.
Oh, yeah.
Seat at the Table.
It's a great record.
It's a really great record. And then I saw her at ACL. And yeah. That show is incredible.
Yeah.
It's...
I didn't see her.
It's, but. Oh my goodness. If you can catch her while she's still on this cycle.
Yeah.
I'd heard hype about it.
Yeah.
But it's actually as good as the hype. It's a freaking great show.
That's good.
And then I really liked, I've been listening to a lot of the big pop records lately, actually. I loved Bruno Mars's record.
Mm-hmm.
Rihanna's last record, Anti, I think was incredible.
I like Bruno Mars, but I feel like it's way more recycled. It feels almost like cover songs. It's so specific to what it's lifting from. Sure. You know what I'm saying?
I can,
which is, I mean, it's fine.
Yeah. The So it definitely feels like a tribute.
To me, his music is like the equivalent. I've not listened to his lyrics very much. Mm-hmm. I've listened to stuff from the first album that came out.
Right.
But to me, it's almost like a Twinkie or something. Like, it's great. It tastes good. It's really good. And it's fun to eat. You know what I mean?
So I did not... I hope...
I'm such an asshole.
If he somehow ever hears this, I hope he doesn't take too much offense. I did not really feel his first couple records. And then he did that song... I actually think on the second record, there was that song... the one that sounded like The Police. I don't remember the name of it, but that kind of perked my ears up, and I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. But then this last one, I don't know if it just hit me at the right time or what, but that like late 80s, early 90s, yeah. R&B, New Jack Swing, whole thing. I don't know. I really, really love that record. Yeah. And it's, I thought it was cool. He brought in a lot of the guys who made those records the first time.
I didn't
know
that.
Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis produced on it and stuff. So I think that's just
I'm a huge fan of those guys.
Yeah. So I think a lot of the authentic, like Babyface is on there.
That's
awesome. I think a lot of the authenticity comes from the fact that it's the same guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Who made the stuff that he's paying tribute to.
Yeah.
So to do that, to like, you know, he played the AMAs or whatever and brought it and did a like a tribute to the Gap Band or something like that. I think it's cool to...
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's cool to be exposing people from the top 40 crowd to that stuff. People who might not otherwise listen to it. And I think that's better than just straight up ripping it off and not, you know, not paying any tribute, not involving any of those people. So,
yeah, that is cool.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that he had such a close tie with it. So the question I was going to ask, do people ask you to produce their records?
Yeah, they do.
Is that something... you're interested in doing?
It is. I actually really, really like doing it. I think in part because of my early frustrations with producers.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't have an ego as a producer. It's like, I don't care. Well, like whatever you want to do.
Album.
Like it's not going to be my name on the front.
Right.
So, if you're looking for my sound, whatever that is, like I'll try to help bring you that. But I don't know what that is. Like, ultimately, it's like, well, I have a little bit of expertise that you may not have, and I want to help you make the sounds you want to have. So, yeah, it's fun not having the burden of having to write the songs and all that, but able to contribute.
It seems like you have, you would come into it because of your previous experiences and being an artist with the sensitivity to the artist to bring out whatever it is you were able to bring out of yourself to bring that out of them, like the very best of themselves, which to me is always the mark of the best, you know, producer. Well, plus a guy that can tell when you do something well.
Yeah. I think that's the hard part. Like my favorite thing to do when I'm producing artists is just help them get out of their own way. I think I can recognize in people the kind of insecurity and apprehension that I felt when I was coming into a room with some guy who like had this magical knowledge that I didn't have and be like, I'm just some dude. I'm just pressing record. Like you're doing the magical thing. Like don't feel self-conscious about trying this weird thing that's in your head.
Right.
Like, just do it. And if it's cool, it's cool. And if not, then we'll do it again until it's cool, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting because recording yourself, you've given yourself the luxury to learn and to take the time to branch out and search for sounds or parts or anything. Do you play drums?
Yeah.
I went to this thing and you were in the movie, but I think you were out on the road or something, but you did Project ATX6.
Yeah.
I went to their gala thing
cool.
at the end of the thing. And I saw a lot. You went to Japan and to
Japan, Germany, France and Canada.
What does something like that, I didn't get to talk to a lot of people that did it, but I wonder as an artist myself, like what, it's an amazing experience. Mm-hmm. Do you make these relationships and you're able to go back to these places? Like what do you leave with when you leave something like obviously when you win a Black Fret Award, you leave with a bunch of money.
Yeah.
or you have access to money to unlock it as you go.
Right.
But this Project ATX6, do you leave with Were you able to make connections? Now you can go back to Germany and play, or Japan, or whatever.
So we worked. We definitely worked on that. I haven't been back yet, so it's hard to say how fruitful those connections will be. But we're working on it actively, and we're having conversations with some of the same people, like Reeperbahn Festival, which we played in Germany.
Right.
It's great to be able to say you've done that, and I think it'll help open doors when we're trying to go back. But I think the biggest things were probably the relationships with the other Austin artists, honestly. I met some people doing that who I still talk to all the time, and we either have or are planning to work together. And
that's cool.
So that was cool. And then just the experience of playing in front of crowds who have different norms around the way that they consume performance. That was cool too.
Yeah.
I definitely want to get back to other places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess that is cool to get when you're going and doing that stuff, even though you're playing alone, you still got like a gang.
Yeah.
You can, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got someone to talk to.
Yeah.
You got Corey Baum.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every time he was on screen in that video they made, it was just the funniest thing I've ever seen anybody do. That guy is legit.
Yeah.
And he's weird, man. Yeah. I remember when he first moved here, he used to work at Momo's. He was a bartender, and he was like a nice Jewish boy. And then all of a sudden he became like this handlebar mustache, like weird cowboy.
Yeah.
That I love.
Yeah. He's a great guy.
Yeah. He is a great guy. It's on your thing. It says that you compose music for the stage and TV, HBO, Fox, and NBC. Is that they used your tunes, or did you write, like, did they go like, hey, Mobley, we need some music for the basketball game?
Some of both. Okay. Some of both. Some of the stuff is just somebody had heard of me and picked up some of my original stuff. And then other times I've either been commissioned to play versions of, like, an ESPN commissioned version of Lovely Day, the Bill Withers song.
Oh, yeah.
So I did that. And then other stuff has been, like the stage work especially, has been completely original scoring for other creative projects.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
What HBO show were you on?
True Blood.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Well, it's a vampire one.
I honestly have never seen it, but I know a lot of people like it.
I think I saw the first season. I thought it was going to be real cool because they sold it in the previews before the show started as like vampires are like out and they're being integrated into society.
Huh.
And to me, there was like a real sort of like race thing because it took place in the South, and there was like this should they be able to vote kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah,
I thought it was going to be more like that than like a bunch of weird sex and like wolves and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be this real weird like take on it all.
Yeah.
What? Before we go, what's your current take on like what's happening in the world politically and how sort of are you afraid? Do you find inspiration from it? Do you cower in fear at night
from what they're telling you? I'm definitely not afraid. I don't think I'm predisposed to be afraid, but on top of that, I actually don't think things have changed as dramatically as they feel like they've changed.
Right.
It's more like this stuff that has been going on is just less hidden and secret.
It's true.
Than it has been. Like if you just dig a little bit, it's like, oh, yeah, all these really messed up things that were going on. I just wasn't aware of them or as aware of them as I am of things now. I don't know. I definitely feel anxiety. Feel anxiety.
I wonder if that's just like anxiety and fatigue from the coverage of it all. The way that it's presented to us, I feel like, is kind of gone.
Yeah, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about that because I think there are things that weren't being covered at all that are being covered now that I think desperately need to be covered and mm-hmm. have needed to be covered for a while. But yeah, at the same time, I'll often have a lot of frustration about the way that they're covered.
Right.
I don't know. To whatever degree I feel fatigue at this stuff, which I do, when I feel that way, I try to just remind myself, well, there are people who are facing the brunt of this a lot harder than you are. And like, I may be fatigued about hearing the president say some racist shit, but he's not coming to deport me. You know, he's not going to come break up my family yet, but there are people who I know and people who live in my neighborhood who have to deal with that kind of anxiety every day.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just try to keep it in perspective.
Yeah.
But that's why it's important to be engaged on this stuff and try to make things better.
It's interesting because I'm first generation born American from a Cuban family, but there's no, like, I look like some guy from Idaho.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, just some straight up white guy. It's interesting to catch that stuff from my side.
Yeah.
Because I'm not the way I look and maybe not the way I've been treated, but the culture that I come from is a lighter shade of brown.
Right.
But I feel that. I grew up living in Mexico and like I feel very close to cultures that are even outside of the United States, my own Spanish and Latin culture. But it is freaky to see how quickly people like my own dad are like, yeah, we got to get rid of these immigrants. And you're like, hey man, you're an immigrant.
Right. Well, we have so many examples in history of like people just not making the connection of I could be next. You know what I mean? Like, that shouldn't be what it takes.
No.
Ideally, you should care because somebody else is already facing it.
Yeah.
But I think a huge percentage of this country just is completely oblivious to the degree to which you're next.
Yeah.
And in certain ways, like, you're already on the chopping block. Like, so many of the people who voted to make what's happening now happen had the rude awakening that, oh, right, I'm on welfare.
Right.
Oh, right, I'm on Obamacare.
Yeah.
Oh, right, this is going to hurt me. You know
what
I mean?
I don't have anything in common with the billionaire television star.
Right. Yeah. I don't own any stocks. Yeah, like,
exactly,
I don't, you know what
exactly.
I mean? Like,
yeah.
So, yeah,
I thought it was really funny when they told, and we can go back to music, but there was one thing that was said that was so funny and just how out of touch the people that are in charge are. When they did this tax cut, there was this guy that was like, man, you know, people will be getting about $1,000 a year back and you can redo your kitchen. And you're like, poor people don't
redo kitchens.
They don't care about redoing their kitchen, man. Like, that is the weirdest. Like, poor people can redo their kitchen. They don't even own. I don't even own my place. I can't redo my kitchen.
Right. Right. I mean, on so many levels. First of all, no, you can't redo a kitchen for $1,000.
Right.
But second of all, yeah, it's like $1,000 is like, if you have a family, $1,000 is a couple weeks of groceries. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I'm not going to redo a kitchen.
Yeah.
Redo my empty refrigerator.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
That's a weird thing. Anyway, man, look, this has been great talking to you.
Likewise,
it really has.
Likewise.
You're as cool as I'd hoped you would be when I met you, or when we booked this. You're also your KUTX Artist of the Month.
That's right.
Your Austin Music Foundation Artist of the Month.
That's right.
Your record, Fresh Lies Volume 1, drops today, Friday, April 27th. His single Swoon. You got a number of singles from this album out
already.
That's
right. The new one is Young Adult Fiction.
Yeah, Young Adult Fiction,
yeah.
Which is the one that has the video.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Is there anything I'm missing that people can find you at MobleyWho.com? You're going to be on tour from May 3rd at least until July 19th, so people can find you all over the United States and Mexico.
Yeah, I'll be touring until the end of July. And I'll be, for people who are in Austin, I'll be back in town for a record release show, I believe, on June 2nd at Mohawk. We haven't announced yet, but I believe it's June 2nd
on
Mohawk. Yeah.
Well, dude, it's been great talking
to
you. Everyone get out there, go to MobleyWho.com. And today is the day you can get Fresh Lies Volume 1 for yourself. Do it. Go to, if you're listening to this in the morning, go to Waterloo, 5 p.m. Pick it up on vinyl. I will.
Awesome.
Thanks for doing the show, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. What a great conversation with such a talented, and thoughtful man. Mobley. His album, Fresh Lies, Volume 1, is out today, Friday, April 27th. If you're listening to this the day that it comes out, he's doing an in-store at Waterloo Records today at 5 p.m. And look, if you're living anywhere in the United States, he's going to be coming to a town near you sometime between May 3rd and July 19th. Go to MobleyWho.com for all of your information on Mobley. Man, what a great conversation. That was a real treat getting to know him. See what I mean about that? It was weird at first. But he really warmed up, and I had such a great time talking to him. I really enjoyed my time talking to Mobley. I hope he did too. This album, Fresh Lies Volume 1, is fantastic. Get out there and get it. It is great. Yes, and while you're out there on MobleyWho.com looking for other things to listen to, don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast on Spotify, on Stitcher, on iTunes, on Apple Podcasts, on Android Podcasts, on Overcast, on TuneIn, basically anywhere where you find podcasts, you will find How Did I Get Here. Please share it. If you enjoyed the show, share it. Give us a rating. Leave a comment. Do what you can. Support the show. We don't do any advertising anywhere. I don't hire a publicist for this show. This show is word of mouth. It's been going on for almost 7 years, and hopefully everyone's been enjoying it. I sure have. And days like today when I get to sit down and talk to a guy like Mobley, that's amazing. Talented, thoughtful man. All right, let's hear his song, Torch, from his brand new album, Fresh Lies, Volume 1, out today. Go to MobleyWho.com for all of your Mobley needs, all right? Have a great weekend, whatever it is you're doing. Let's get down.
Me burn, are you tired?